This is a HeadGum Podcast.
I would like to stone cold sober die to this song. And not today, but when I've
reached... I don't know why that makes me so depressed.
When my time has come. When I've lived a long, robust, satisfying life.
You really ruined my day by saying that, and I can't tell you why.
Please, we're talking about years and years away. Like,
it's
at least 4 or 5 years away.
It's not the idea of you dying. It's the idea that that's true for you. That we could be like, it's time, and we go, hey, Tim.
Would it be my first choice? No.
No, of course, Come on, Eileen, or Dirty Japanese is
your first choice. Yeah, probably. Or the Ghostbusters theme. It would be in my 10, though. I mean, we're talking about these songs are all of a piece for
me. This is why you're the number 3 bad boy in podcasting.
Number 3.
This right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, totally.
Punch it!
It's time for Punch the Jam.
Punch
the Jam.
Punch
the Jam.
Punch
the Jam.
Greetings. Welcome to Punch Up the Jam. I'm regretting saying greetings. My name is Miel Bredo. This is the podcast where I try to make the greatest hits even greater, and I don't always succeed, but I think I try. So that counts for something, right?
You get an A for effort, if nothing else, and I think you get a lot more.
Thank you so much.
But as a baseline entry agreement, you're getting an A for effort.
Oh,
with potential, huge potential beyond that.
Oh, Griffin. Well, now I need to... How do I follow that? I need to introduce
you. I'm being nice because I felt so warmly greeted into this episode. That's what I'm saying. Your opening was so strong that now I feel like I have to return the favor.
Oh my God, and you are. Let me give you a proper introduction.
Okay.
Oh my God. You know, this is your introduction music. You know him from Blank Check, The Tick. He's the number 3 bad boy in podcasting. It's Griffin Newman. I kind of just want to keep playing this song, honestly.
I did not realize until this moment
that was the song.
No, I knew that was the song, but that what I've been lacking my whole life up until this point is the beginning of Steal My Sunshine playing as people introduce me.
Oh,
it just felt right. Like, for the first time, I was like, this is my brand. This is
what
should be playing every time I walk into a restaurant.
It's, you know why? It's because it's got major Final Countdown energy.
Yeah.
But just toned way the fuck down.
Yes.
So that's you.
Wow. Wow. Maybe that's my new honorific. That goes above number 3 bad boy of podcasting.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, please. My pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
Of course. I loved your last episode so much, even though I felt so mean the whole time.
It was a wild one. I mean, but also, to be fair, Demi and I were being especially dumb. I mean, we were being... I re-listened to it when it came out, and I was like, I did not realize in the moment how dumb we were both being and egging each other on.
Something happens in the stewed.
It was weird.
There's an energy.
It's that stewed life. And if you haven't lived it, you don't get it.
A certain je ne sais quoi of the stewed.
The stewed.
And now here in New York, I don't know. I kind of feel like it's the same. It's still happening.
Yeah, this one feels a little more mellow to me. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's probably because I'm wearing all black. I'm a
goth
now.
Maybe. You are goth now. Mm-hmm. You're very seen.
Thank you so
much. But I also feel like the LA studio was like elevated.
Yeah.
It felt like we were
altitude
in like
sickness.
Lauren Michaels' SNL office where you're like high up with a big window overseeing the rest of the desks and everything. We recorded that late at night.
Yeah. Yeah. Correct.
That made it feel a little weird.
Mm-hmm. I think we're going to get there today because if nothing else, this song.
This song. Which honks.
So, okay. Your opinion, in my mind, honks is good, bad.
Huge. Honks is huge for me.
Huge. Okay. Yeah. Define your feelings on the song, your history with the song.
Well, so you reached out. You said, well, you want to come on? I said, yes, of course. Can you send me the document? Because I know you have your document with the request.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's like, here are things we've wanted to do. Here are things the fans have requested. And it's sort of ranked in ways like that. And Steal My Sunshine was number 1 on the list.
Absolutely. People are dying
to
hear us
talk
about this.
The most requested thing. And I gave that as one of 3 options. I didn't put too much emphasis on it because I was like, I bet that's one that people are fighting over and I don't want to take it for myself. You might want to hold on to that until Maron comes on the show or whatever.
Mark Maron famously loves Lend.
Loves them. Used to open for them.
He actually had a side podcast for a second.
And Mark Maron's always wearing a Lend-style bucket cap. If we know anything about Mark Maron.
Getting drunk and trashing scooters in Miami.
That's his vibe.
Absolutely. Highland Park, it's an allegory.
Have you seen his first special? That's all it was about. So I was like, this is one of the 3 I would do. And then you said, wait, I feel like I'm remembering that I heard at some point,
yes,
you have some crazy connection to Steal My Sunshine.
Yes. Someone tweeted at me or emailed me, I don't remember, that you performed it or something.
Now, here's the thing. That sounds really familiar, but I cannot recall what exactly happened.
Have you played that song? Did you cover that song?
No musical ability.
Whatsoever. Why would someone lie? I'm pretty sure you must have done this.
I am too. And I sort of have this memory in the back of my head and I cannot crystallize it. So as just a side plot line for this episode, I want to try to recall what happened. I do love this song. I consider it to be one of my favorites.
So here you go. I just did a quick cursory Google.
Okay.
Ukulele Army number 23. Oh, well, okay. Steal My Sunshine with Griffin Newman.
Plotline resolved. I did perform this song on
YouTube. This is you playing a penny whistle. And let me guess, you're going to sing?
I do. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, you're doing the spoken intro. Here you are.
And then let's hear if I land it here. Okay, we're doing the laughing.
Karen! I love you!
Yep, there you are.
Okay.
Playing a woodblock.
Cool.
So... How could you forget this monumental performance?
I've lived so many lives. That's Halle Bullitt.
You just got fact-checked on your own fucking life, man.
I know. This is really embarrassing. Because I thought it was not something that was going to be Googleable and we would be able to uncover this together. I was like, there must be like a summer camp performance or like... I was like, maybe I did it at a karaoke bar once. I was like, there has to be some... Or did I talk about on some other podcast some weird personal history I have with this? No, in fact, it was one Google search and it's the top result.
It was the first thing that came up.
Well, that sucks.
So you love the song then?
I love it. I love it. It's
and
one of my favorite pop
songs. And you famously covered it.
I famously covered it. Who could forget? Only me. Halle Bullitt used to do a YouTube series called Ukulele Army where she would invite people on. Halle Bullitt, who was the front woman of the band for the Chris Gethard show and Dirt Bike Annie and a bunch of great punk bands here in New York City. But yeah, she reached out to me and was like, well, you want to be on the show? And I feel like I just immediately, my go-to was like...
Steal My Sunshine.
Yeah, I must have done it karaoke too. I find, like, I wish I was a musician more than anything.
Uh-huh.
I feel like if I had any musical ability, that's all I would do.
It is hard, I will say.
Yes. I mean, I'll say this. I think everything's hard. And the things Correct. That I do for a living, which I also like doing, I find incredibly difficult.
Hard.
Like, none of it comes easy to me.
Yeah.
I'm not a natural person.
No.
Everything takes too much effort and thought.
100%.
So it's not like I have this fantasy of just being like a savant.
No, no.
But I'm like, if that were a thing that I felt like I could hone,
yes.
I feel like I would rather put my energy into that. As much as I love comedy.
I get you more than words can say.
You know, and it's that thing of like, if I could be someone who was like, if I could like be like David Byrne. And it's like, oh, these songs are like humorous. He's not a comedy musician.
Yeah, or Father John Misty.
Right. Any number of people. Like most of my favorite musicians. Steal My Sunshine is a song that I find pretty funny in
it's
a lot of ways.
It's so funny. And the story, okay, there's so much about it that's so funny. Of course, we're talking about Len, who are from Canada.
Uh-huh.
If you can't tell from the butter tarts. It came out in 1999. It samples Andrea True Connections, more.
Yes.
Did you know that?
I did.
There it is. I feel betrayed.
Well, and it's also kind of crazy because like more is a famous song that everyone knows that plays all the time.
I've never heard it.
Really?
Uh-uh.
Have you only heard that sample or have you heard the rest?
No, it's the most I've heard right there.
Really? Okay, because go to like the middle of the song.
Okay.
Because the whole thing is that interlude sounds nothing like the rest of the song.
I don't know this song.
Really?
No.
You know this song, right? Marika was nodding. She does know this song. This is one of those disco songs that I feel like always gets regurgitated in the like bar mitzvah, corporate party, car commercial, sort of like the most baseline acceptable.
Okay.
Maybe not as famous as, Celebration.
Yes.
But I feel like adjacent to that kind of thing, you know?
Maybe we just didn't have any of those aforementioned events on the island where I'm from.
No Jews.
No, unfortunately.
No offices.
Not a single one.
Yeah. No corporations.
Not a single one.
Sounds like paradise. I'm Jewish. But yes, More, which is a song I'd heard a number of times in my childhood and never really cared about that much, that's one of those songs that's a joke kind of disco song.
Okay. You love these joke songs.
Well, not a joke like, oh, it's like kind of like use a shorthand goofy rather than being
like
intentionally
Spanish
funny. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. No disrespect to anybody, but I felt like the song was just kind of overplayed. Yeah. And I never had a strong affinity for it. And then I remember discovering Steal My Sunshine as part of a like pre-Y2K VH1 countdown, the 10 best one-hit wonders of the 90s.
Oh, God, I remember those. Right after pop-up video?
Totally.
Oh, man.
And it was one of those specials that was kind of shitting on everything. Like, it was, like, you know, right before, like, I Love the 80s and that sort
Divas.
Of panel show came up. Right. Yeah. It was like, oh, we'll do countdown music video shows where everyone's like kind of ragging on these sort of like chintzy.
We're MTV's know. TRL, but if you're over 40.
Right, right. And it's like, you know, here are just cultural figures, quote unquote, mm-hmm. making very, very light jokes. Mm-hmm. And then weirdly, Chuck Klosterman's there, right? And he would always be the only one who had anything positive to say. Mm-hmm. But I heard it on that and I went, this fucking rules. This is how I want songs to sound.
Wow.
And this basic beat is so much fun to me. This video looks fun.
Okay,
their voices are fun.
I have to tell you these notes because it only is going to make you love it more. This song is it's chaotic good, but sure. It is chaos.
Well, the one final thing I want to say to close this loop is many years later, I'm in a car with my friends and I hear Steal My Sunshine on the radio and I go, oh my God, Steal My Sunshine. Turn it up. And we crank it up and hear that section that you just played.
Boom, boom, boom.
Transitioning back into more, more, more.
Oh, no.
And I felt betrayed, but also went, how have I never known that more, more, more for 8 seconds goes into the most transcendent interlude of all time that sounds nothing like the rest of the song?
I mean, honestly, good on them for hearing
great
this is
ear.
A great sample.
Yeah, it's incredible sample, but it's like you'd have to really be paying close attention to pull that out and see the potential there, which lended to the musical geniuses.
Fucked up out of your mind at a rave, as is the case.
Oh, my God.
So okay. Mark Costanza went out to the rave, felt inspired by it. Afterward, ends up at his friend Brendan Canning. If you don't know that name, he's from Broken Social Scene.
Of course.
This web gets very wide in Canada's musicians.
Goes all the way to the top.
Brendan plays this disco song. Mark samples it right then and there.
Wow.
Loops it on the spot.
He knew it.
He instantly was
he
like,
was tripping,
this is a song.
But he knew it.
100%. Yeah, okay. It probably was like 5 a.m, but right. I don't know if they observe time in the same way in Canada. So then he like brings it home to his sister, with whom he has a very on and off relationship with.
Right.
And I guess they don't really have a band. He just is like, when he makes music, he's like, hey, I want a girl on this. And she sings.
Sure.
Like their whole strategy is crazy. So they record it on an 8.5-inch tape and she throws it in the closet, which I'm not clear if that's like out of rage or just like, fuck it, we're done.
Yeah. Or she's just a messy person.
Maybe she, yeah. She's
she
just
didn't know where to
sloppy.
Put it. Yeah.
Sure, sure, sure. The closet's a great place for everything you
that's
don't know.
That's where I put everything.
So Mark is kind of like, I don't know, that song's whatever. They don't really think about it. And then later someone's like, hey, we should try that one song. What was that called? You know, because they're making their album, You Can't Stop the Bum Rush, which I would like to say I did own.
Yeah, same here.
I bought it with my own money.
Yeah.
And then I was very sad to find out it was mostly rap. And I was like, Biz Markie's on this?
Yes. I can't believe you have not done this song sooner on this podcast.
There's
as someone
just
who owned
so many
that album.
Songs.
Well, that's true. And variety's the spice of life. Can I ask, when you said, just for clarification,
yes,
then you can
yes.
continue because I'm loving this context.
Of course.
When you said that they didn't really have a band,
yeah.
Do you mean that Len was just sort of this
Len's
guy
and his, like his
and
sister.
Whoever he feels like
kind
working
of, yes.
with at that time?
I think they just were like partying and kind of being like, let's make some music, man.
Right.
Like, I don't think it was like, we're a band and we're trying to get to Hollywood.
Len is his Nine Inch Nails, where it's like,
yeah.
Right.
But maybe
I'm Trent Reznor. Here's who I like right now. Here's who's working on this album with me. I am the only constant.
Mm-hmm. I've always said Len is like Nine Inch Nails.
They're exactly the same. Two sides of the same coin.
Okay, so she throws it. Okay, well, now Wikipedia is defying itself. Whatever. Either in a closet or under the bed.
Well,
we'll never know.
Maybe she had one of those fold-up beds.
Oh, the Murphy bed.
That goes into the closet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In that case, it could be both.
Either way, when they went to find it, they couldn't because it was lost under the bed.
Wow.
And they almost never recorded it because of that.
Wow.
But
so the original recording is lost to time.
No, they found it eventually.
Wow.
It just, I guess, it was tight for a minute.
Okay.
We weren't sure how this was going to go.
Yeah.
So I just grabbed a giant quote because I think it says more about the song than we could. This is, of course, from Mark Costanza himself.
Yeah.
I don't even understand how people relate to it. When I listen to that song, I just can't make sense of it because there's nothing right about that song. The elements are all wrong, but that's why I love it so much. I still love it to this day because I listen to it and I go, I don't know what happened, man. It's like a perfect storm of the weirdest shit. Think about this. Think about how unusual it is that even Derek Whibley from Sum 41 was there when I recorded vocals.
Okay.
What?
Was he playing or was he just in the room?
I think he was hanging out. I think he was just in the stewed. He wanted some of that stewed juice.
I mean, it's all about the stewed. We can't say this enough.
What are the chances that two people in one room end up having these careers and making completely two different kinds of music? You know, Brendan Canning's talking on one of the versions because the label said, well, you need something at the beginning. And that ended up being Brendan. And what are the chances that a guy who ends up being in Broken Social Scene, the guy who ends up being in Sum 41, and the guy who ends up having huge success with Len are in the same room? It's mind-boggling. I'd love to point out that he only gave the huge success credit to himself.
Uh-huh.
He goes on to say, who could have thought that I could ever be this guy who wrote a song that 15 years later is a cool-ass, is on cool-ass shows like Mr. Robot. And this was a song that wasn't supposed to be cool at all. This was a joke. Not a joke, but almost like, ha-ha, disco beat. Ha-ha, raspy voice. Ha, girls singing about being all in space. Ha-ha, let's see if we can combine those things together. It's never going to work, you know? And then suddenly you're like, what the fuck just happened? I'm on fucking MTV.
It's also a song that has, like, several little comedy sketches within it.
It
has, like, little, like, vaudeville dialogues.
Yes. Okay, last thing I need to tell you about the making of this song is the video.
And you're telling me that one of those dialogues is performed
by the guy from Broken Social Scene.
Okay, last thing. I'm trying to process all of this.
I know, it's so much, right?
Wow. Yeah.
I was like, I have to copy paste. My fingers got sore. So much copying and pasting. Okay, the music video, the story behind it is that he was like, hey, he just felt so cocky once the song started getting traction. He goes to the label and he's like, if you're going to work with me, you got to let me make my own video. And they were like, what? And he's like, and I want $150,000. And they were like, okay. And they give him $150,000.
So he directed this video.
I think he had a DP, a single camera. I think that's all that they was like supplied professionally.
And $150,000 was not the budget. That was his salary for the video?
That was the budget. However,
okay, okay.
Up to him to spend however he saw fit.
Yeah.
So they fly down to Miami and I think maybe at some point also Venice Beach, California.
Most of the video is them like on a Vespa together, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And it's 5 days of shooting and every day starts at 1 p.m. because they're so hungover. They cannot wake up before that. They did not have permits. They just stole them from other film sets. And then we're like, this is us. They tried originally to get Harleys, not scooters.
Yeah.
But they couldn't because none of them had licenses.
But so much better that way. This video would blow if they
were
on motorcycles.
It was Harleys. It would not be cool, right?
There is such a weird, because I mean, the 90s were an incredible time for music videos.
Yep.
You had some of, you know, people who would go on to become some of those prominent filmmakers.
Oh, they were making
American
all the
scene.
Videos.
Right. The Steal My Sunshine video is not especially striking in the way like a Fincher video or a Spike Jonze video or a Mark Romanek video
is. I don't
know,
it's pretty up there.
But the energy of it, there is some weird energy.
It's exactly
that
like
fits
the song.
With everything you're saying.
I think it's literally just being drunk.
A bunch of happy accents, being hungover. I mean, I have to imagine the reason they were so hungover every morning is because they had spent the previous night after wrapping filming going, we need to celebrate this shit because we're making a classic.
I mean, maybe because this is my favorite part of the story, of course. They broke the service elevator at their hotel.
Okay.
Because they spent 20 minutes between 20 people with the doors open, loading it with $5,000 of liquor for two nights of drinking. They broke a service elevator because it was too heavy.
So what you're describing is them trying to load in all their liquor for the entire shoot. Like they bought everything in bulk and they were like, cool, let's get our equipment upstairs. Let's get $5,000 worth of...
That was the music video budget. Because they shot, they had no concept, no treatment, nothing. They shot a feature film's worth of footage.
Verite style.
Verite style. To make this music video. And they only rented the scooter successfully because I guess the scooter rental guy was so out of it that when they handed him the same license for all like six of them, he didn't notice.
I'm going to ask a really big question now. Is the guy from Len the most unsung hero of American art?
And
do
he's
we
Canadian.
Not? Is he? That's why.
He's Canadian.
Okay, that's why. Of course.
But I think that provides a little more color.
Totally.
For the song, right?
Yeah, and it's contextualizing a few reasons I think why I like this song. I mean,
you need to explain that.
I'm realizing now what it has in common with Come On Eileen, another one of my top songs, which was the last song I discussed here on this show, because your whole criticism of Come On Eileen is this song is insane. These things should not be together. Mm-hmm. These are too many different musical styles of instruments and too many different like lines and rhythms.
It.
Totally. And I respect you loving one and not the other, but they both have that same sort of insane approach of like, let's put completely contradictory things together in the same song.
In my mind, Come On Eileen's chaotic evil and this is chaotic good. And I can't
I
tell you why.
That. I will accept that.
I think this to me feels like it takes itself less seriously, and maybe that's me projecting.
I think so too, and we certainly talked about the bizarre sexual, not even
that
undertones.
That also throws me off.
Overtones of Come On Eileen. But yes, whereas this song just feels like a fucking goof, it feels like it has a better sense of humor about itself.
Yeah.
And there was something just so infectiously joyous about it.
It's just so stupid.
That feels like it couldn't come out of too much critical thought.
No, absolutely.
You kind of have to be in a vibe. You maybe have to be blackout drunk.
I think you like this song significantly more if you're like additionally fucked up. The more fucked up you get, the better the song sounds to you.
I will say I'm terrified of drugs. I don't use them.
You sound like a narc.
I'm a rabbi. But this song does make me wish that I liked ecstasy.
Yeah.
You know,
well, hit
saying?
Me up after the show. You know,
okay,
if you want to try
we'll
that.
Talk.
Okay, the patron Sarah, who has an obscene username, I will not say the rest of. She said, "Lastly, I remember being very young and in the back seat of my mom's minivan, the song blaring from what was probably like the local adults hit radio station. I did not understand possession nor metaphor, and pictured this man, Mr. Len, I assumed, robbing a girl at gunpoint to steal her sunshine.
Literally steal the sunshine from her bag."
I love that so much.
I do too.
It's so sweet. With all that said, should we get into the song?
Yes, please.
Are you ready for this intro? Oh,
yeah, I'm so excited.
Oh. Oh my God.
My ex-girlfriend had this as her alarm.
That's very scary.
In the morning, which was
That's
scary,
very
but
scary.
Also was nice because it ramps up. It's not like a sudden blast. You know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely. It's like the final countdown.
Yes. Final countdown to being awake.
I haven't really talked to him, but he looks pretty down.
He looks pretty down.
Yeah, well, maybe we should cheer him up then.
What do you suppose we should do?
Well, does he like butter tarts?
Okay, we gotta talk about this a lot. I hope you've carved out enough time to just talk
I
about
did.
This opening.
Oh my God. Hey, Matt. Yeah, Tim. Hey, you talked to Mark lately? Haven't really talked to him, but he looks, down. And then the other one mocking him, he looks pretty, down. Yeah, well, maybe we should cheer him up then. What do you, suppose we should do? Well, does he like butter tarts?
Why is this funny? Because I...
It's so funny.
I remember
so
the first time I heard the song, right? After it being on the VH1 One Hit Wonder thing and being like, I gotta find this.
Classic.
Probably running to Napster.
Yeah, because Shazam doesn't exist yet. You're trying to hear the lyrics and type them out and to ask Jeeves.
Right. So I'm Napstering this song, and probably 6 days later when it finishes downloading, I put it on and I hear this intro for the first time because VH1 was not playing that.
Of course, I did download the album version, as we must.
Right, of course. I remember the first time hearing this intro, I laughed out loud.
I think it's because it sounds
times.
Like they're trying not to laugh.
Yeah.
So instantly we're in on the joke.
And something about, I mean, I'm glad you called that much attention to the uhs.
So many uhs.
But all the uhs feel so perfectly timed and placed and performed, but I don't know why.
I think it's like dry. It feels as if they're forgetting their lines
the,
and then
what
just
do you,
leaning into it.
Suppose we should do. Like, it's so
They
funny.
Hate it. They're like, this is so dumb. And then we can go, okay, cool, it is dumb. But then still, also, the idea that their solution to their friend maybe like having a bout of depression is
does he like butter tart?
Which is also so fucking Canadian.
I know.
Half the Patreon comments under this song when I said we were doing it was, what is a butter tart? And then there was like one noble Canadian answering all of them.
But there's something so evocative about it. And even though the sentiment of it is funny, where it's like two guys talking, they're not emotionally intelligent enough to understand the depression their friend's going through.
But
they know they need to do something.
Yes, I'll give them credit for that.
They can't figure out what it is or how to deal with it, but they know something's up.
Anything's better than nothing.
Right.
I'll take a butter tart.
So that sentiment is funny in and of itself. That sort of character backstory is sweet and funny. But if the line was, I don't know, does he like cookies?
Not funny.
If it's any other dessert item.
Angel food cake.
Not funny.
Blondies.
Right.
It's not funny.
And even if you go specific, does he like Kit Kats? Does he like Reese's?
They're still too known.
Not funny. Butter tart.
I want C-list of desserts.
There's something about butter tart.
Yeah, even like a flan would be too known.
And I'm like, butter cake, I'm like, we're getting close, but it's all, there's something, butter tart is the right series of sounds.
It sounds like it's for a child. You know what would make me laugh? Cake pops. That would crack me up.
Yeah.
Does he like cake pops?
Does he like cake pops?
See, so I think it's like, it just sounds like a foolish thing to eat to me.
Yeah. And it's such a specific, immediate pull.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think we should do? And the first thing that comes to mind, does he like butter tart?
This feels like it's the punched up version, which makes me really want to hear the first few versions. Right.
Right. The
outtakes. Does he like devil's food cake?
Yeah.
I also think it sets us up perfectly for what happens next, which honestly, clipping it where I did was painful because.
I was lying on the grass a Sunday morning of last week, indulging in my self-defeat. My mind was thugged on lacy bugs, all twisted around the meat. A comfortable 3 feet deep.
Can you understand any of that after? I was lying on the grass of Sunday morning of last week,
indulging in my self-defeat. Crystal clear.
And then
those lacy the bugs are giving hugs.
It's like, I think they have a doubled vocal that's not really that matched up. So it's just obscuring every word.
Do you have the lyrics?
I do.
Can you tell me what it is?
Yes. He says, my mind was thugged, all laced and bugged, all twisted, wrong and beat. A comfortable 3 feet deep. So he's half dead, I guess is what he's saying.
Yeah.
So like kind of poetic.
He's not 6 feet under. He's 3 feet deep. I realized I'd forgotten it was part of the previous clip.
So this is Mark. So the two friends are talking about the guy singing now.
Yes.
And he's saying like, I'm not feeling great.
I do love that this song is kind of even handed within the narrative.
But
it's really trying to, this is sort of the Rashomon of white boy rap rock, and that it's really trying to give you multiple perspectives.
They said they were trying to emulate Don't You Want Me by the Human League.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is a lot creepier when we analyze that it's brother and sister singing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I guess they're not trying to have sex in the song.
No, no.
Although they do, I think, make a joke about Sharon Karen having sex. But
yes.
We'll get there.
But that first, that hard hit into...
I was lying on the ground.
Unbelievable.
Open up this pit, baby!
Yeah.
Gets me so amped.
It was so hard for me to restrain myself from jumping out of this chair and pumping my fist. Because the moment it drops, you just want to like rise to your feet.
I
want to
break
somebody.
A board.
It is the only time I ever feel violent urges.
I want to karate chop a board in half.
Totally. I'm like, let me burn down a building.
Oh, can you believe? Wow. Like, what if we burned down a building to lend steal myself?
Yeah. I'm like, let me wrestle somebody, you know?
Just kidding. But like, what if?
Right.
He goes on to say, nothing you'll be able to understand.
Okay.
Now the fuzzy stare from not being there, the confusing morning impair my tribal lunar speak.
Well, here's the thing. I feel like I understand what words he's saying, but they don't make sense as a sentence.
Let's try it again. Now the fuzzy stare from not being there on a confusing morning
week impairs my tribal lunar speak.
So you did understand.
I did. It just doesn't make sense.
It sure does not.
No.
Unless we're dummies who don't understand poetry. He's on 3008.
That's the thing. Like maybe the guy from Len is our Lewis Carroll and we didn't recognize it. Like, this is the modern Jabberwock.
That he was fucked up out of his mind.
In many other ways.
Yeah. Okay, he drank $5,000 of booze.
Yeah.
And he wrote the fuzzy stare from not being there on a confusing morning week.
Impairs my tribal lunar speech. I mean, that's kind of beautiful.
It might mean something. Let's see. Okay, he's on the. He's talking in space.
The fuzzy stares from not being there. I would imagine that means.
So that's people looking at him because he's dissociated.
Oh, what I was going to say was I thought it was him being blasted out of his brain that he's having trouble walking. Like the fuzzy stare. He can't see where the next step is because he's not there. His head's
impaired his tribal lunar speak. Yeah, okay.
The fuzzy stare from not being there.
On a confusing morning week.
Impairs my tribal lunar speak. I think he's talking about being blasted out of his brain.
Well, but this is supposedly about being depressed.
The two things can go hand in hand.
Well, you don't say. You're telling me.
I don't mean to.
You're telling me. Okay. All right.
Blow the doors off this.
Maybe
thing,
that's why they're giving him butter tarts. Absorb right. all the booze.
Yeah.
Okay. It feels like that would be effective, although my go-to is a bagel.
Might as well. I mean, he's, yes. Look, this is a depressed man that is the major issue I think we're dealing with, but there are other side effects of that.
You sound a lot like a therapist right now. Okay, so maybe that doesn't make any sense. Maybe he's just fucked up. And then he's going to say this last line, which I only understand the last line of.
Okay. And of course you can't become if you only say what you would have done. So I missed a million miles of fun. I mean, that's another one that makes no sense to me, but makes perfect sense to me.
What is it? Of course you can't become
if you only say what you would have done.
So you have to do it.
I don't know if I can parse the logic of it, but something about it is very, like, poetic and profound in a, like, Yogi Berra, like, it ain't over till it's over kind
hey,
of
Hey, boo-boo.
Right.
Of course you can't become. Yeah, okay, I think he's saying, like, if you only talk about what you right. would do, you'll never actually do it.
Yeah.
So he's really quoting, the great Nike by right. saying just do it.
Of course you can't become if you only say what you would have done.
So he spends too much time in his head postulating and not actually
in
acting.
The process, you miss roughly a million miles of fun.
Approximately 1 million miles. Take that, the Proclaimers.
Is a ton.
If I found out I missed that much fun, I think there would be no point in moving on with
I could
my life.
Never get over it.
No. The FOMO?
You're so far behind at that point. You're never going to catch up.
I would simply drop down dead.
Yes.
It'd be the end of my life.
Yes.
Okay, finally. Are you ready?
Okay.
Wind tunnel?
Yeah. Yep. Keep bursting on my feet. If
you steal my sunshine. Oh.
I love her singing voice.
If you steal my sunshine.
I like that she sounds like a little cartoon, like woodland sprite. Like she's
absolutely,
like
yep,
an animated rabbit or
it's
a
very much
fairy
like
or
nasally.
Something. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Her voice is so nice. It's so nice what comes in there. It's a thing I like about the song. As I said, I wish I could sing, you know.
Yep.
I wish I had musical ability. This is a song I feel like I will sing to myself a lot, or I've probably done once or twice at karaoke, and I did on this Ukulele Army video, because I'm like, they have such specific character voices.
Oh, it doesn't even sound like singing at this point. It's
neither
acting.
Of them sound like human beings, and they're in totally different directions.
Yep, and they're related.
Right, and the goofball comedy energy part of me is like, I can sing this because I can play these roles.
Uh-huh, it's performance now.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It feels less vulnerable to mm-hmm. try to sing this. So, like, there's that personal thing of it for me, but I also think that's one of the things I like about the songs. The song is that it sounds so weirdly inhuman.
It doesn't sound organic in any capacity.
In any way.
No.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're going to go back to the spoken introduction because we're going to switch to the female perspective.
Sure, okay.
Sharon or Karen, yeah. We'll find out.
Sharon, come here. Wow, look at her. I know. I've never seen Sharon look so bad before.
I did once before, but this is pretty bad.
Yeah, what do you think she got up to last night? Sharon! I love you!
I was flying on the bench, sliding in the park across the street.
It's just so much to discuss.
There's so much. I kind of want to go line through... for
okay,
line.
So,
I feel like we need to slow down because that's dense.
It's really Chaucer who?
Yes.
He says, Chad, come here.
Mm-hmm.
So now we know that one of the speakers is Chad.
And we know it's urgent. He's like, Chad,
come here.
Yeah.
And hang on. This is now a different person because before it was Matt and Tim.
Right.
And now it's Chad and Tim.
It sounds like the same two actors though, right? But I think we're adding new characters to the tapestry here.
The one cinematic universe is five people. Okay.
And how many songs, like, you know, a lot of rap will, like, start out with a comedy sketch or have a comedy skit as, like,
but mid-song.
Its own track?
No, it's pretty rare.
To have, like, two little comedy dialogues in one song.
And to couple it with switching perspectives halfway through. The only other song I could think of in this genre-ish would be Offspring's Nana, Why Don't You Get a Job? When he talks about the girl.
Sure.
But that doesn't have a sketch in the middle.
This is in a whole different league. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So then Chad goes, wow, look at her. Which we didn't judge the physical appearance of the man, Mark. So I do feel like this is a little shittier to Sharon.
But I feel like they clarify it pretty soon. Because they were saying about Mark, like, he seems down. Like, something's wrong.
Okay, but with Sharon, she looks like shit.
Sure, but I think it's also, I read it more as she looks sad.
Well, okay, I think there might be more to the story here, because then he goes, I know, man, I've never seen Sharon look so bad before.
Okay, but then this is my favorite line.
I did once before, but this is pretty bad. See, so they're opening themselves up to a sequel.
Well, I also just love the idea that he's clocking her.
Keeping tabs.
And keeping tabs and going like, no, you know what? There is one and only one time I've seen
in
her look worse.
In the spring of 1996.
And I have to share this with you. Before you go on operating under the assumption this is the worst she's ever looked, I need you to know that by mine own eyes, one time I've seen her look worse. But yes, go on. What were you saying?
And how quickly he introduces it and then wraps it right back up.
But yeah, she has.
No, there was a time. But what were you saying?
Yeah, I did once before. But no, she looks pretty bad.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah.
And then they blow it up one step further because he goes, yeah, what do you think she got up to last night?
So this is my big question about this song forever. These next three lines.
Well, and then they stop and laugh.
A lot of laughing.
Sharon, I love you.
Now there's a long break sort of between their last line.
And the Sharon,
the
I love you.
The laugh and the Sharon, I love you.
I think they're saying she fucked last night. And they're like, what do you think she did last night? And then they're like, and then they assume the position of whoever she had sex with the night before. That's my read.
Now, do you think they're like doing an impression of that person?
So they're like, well, Sharon, I love you. Like, as if it's obvious you got some. But could be reading into it too much. Perhaps they just trailed off, smoked some weed, and we're like, hey, Sharon, hope you're feeling okay.
Yeah. So now, okay, I'm going to tell you what my read on it was when I was 9 or 10 years old and I heard this song, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think if there's anything to support this in the text or if it's just a 10-year-old not understanding how the world works coming to some weird conclusion.
Yes.
How I always read it was, they're talking, then they start laughing in that kind of way. Right, because one of them is sort of making the joke, kind of implying like, hey, I bet she was like getting some last night.
Okay.
And then I had always read it as the song is now cutting to a flashback.
Oh my God.
Of the night before.
Okay, I don't think that's going to check out.
I don't think it checks out. But I had
your
always
10-year-old brain
was it was like an immediate flashback. The comedy was in the juxtaposition of these two guys being like, and then it's like cut to 12 hours earlier. One of these two guys is outside our window. They're now trying to act like we don't know what's going on. And he was like drunkenly, miserably doing his failed attempt at like a John Cusack outside her window.
Had you just seen like what is the movie where he does
say
that?
Say anything.
Thank you.
But for some reason, that was always the image in my head when I like visualized the dialogue in the song. And I always did.
I mean, it's no surprise to me you ended up on the career path you have, given
probably
that your brain works like that.
Yeah, I have a bad broken brain.
However, I would contest that without a woo 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 to think that we did a time jump in the song,
I know,
is absurd.
That's why it's crazy I jumped to that immediately. I went, oh, of course the song is now cutting 12 hours earlier.
Frankly, it's crazy you listened to the lyrics that intensely at 10.
Yeah.
I think I just couldn't stop laughing at the idea of clipping the first line of verse 2 in with the same section. So this is going to be weird to listen to alone and then the rest of.
Okay,
but
yeah.
Actually, we do need to listen to just the way she sings this line.
Sharon, I love you.
I saw you on the bench sliding apart across the street.
You hear it, right?
I hear it. But here's the other thing I want to say that I heard this last time. I think part of it, too, is the yell of Karen, I love you.
It's Sharon.
Do they switch between the two or am I just fucking this up?
Perhaps. A lot of people think it's Karen and I'm not sure why. Okay. But I hear, Sharon, I love you.
So this is the thing I just picked up, which I think is maybe why I thought it was a flashback. It sounds like that voice is coming from further away.
I think it is, but I think they're purely just farther from the microphone.
Right? I think it's probably just, oh, in the sound booth, can you step away so you don't blow out the mic?
Or they're recording, I don't know, in an apartment late at night and they just sure. took a huge rip.
Sure. But it seems like, yes, it's probably a yell as loud as you can, but don't fuck up the mic. Can you?
And I would also give you that the...
Yeah.
It like happens right at this moment as he yells.
It has a time warpy
like
thing.
Yep.
But it always made it feel to me like either this is a third character or this is a different point in the timeline.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I hear you. You really went like Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Now, is there any chance, I'm just, once again, devil's advocate, is there any chance talking about like, you know, the distance on the mic that we're listening to these two guys have their conversation and now coming up behind them, gaining speed, is Mark...
Who no, is Sharon. Yelling. Oh, I mean, it is her brother, which I do feel like it'd be a weird joke to make.
Yeah, I mean, she loves her. I hope he loves his sister.
But doesn't it feel like an explicitly kind of sexual thing? Or?
But I'm saying in this scenario, does he not know what they were talking about?
Okay, so he's just scooting by.
Yeah.
Doesn't know
Bucket
they're talking.
Cap.
Sees his friends laughing. And
I have
his
to remind
sister,
the people who matter to me most that I care.
Sharon! And he says it in the craziest right. Muppet-ass voice.
Right.
Maybe.
Then he just does like a sharp turn, goes to his grandma's house. Grandma, I love you. And then goes over to his like high school English teacher.
I would love that.
Miss Benedict, I love you. He's just going around town telling everyone how much they mean to him.
I can only assume that it went so deeply to her heart and soul that
yeah.
she forgot how to use the correct syllables.
Sure.
Because she goes on to say, I was frying on the bench.
Yeah.
So she's on acid or she's getting
right.
sunburned.
Either
I
one.
I feel like it's
or
acid.
Both.
The one time I did acid got very sunburned.
Really?
So this checks
okay.
out.
Okay.
The bench slide. What?
Uh-huh.
What's a bench slide?
Because we're in a park. I mean, she's making that very clear.
Across the street. Across the street.
It's across the street. So the
across the street. I kind of love it, though, because it's really hammering home. We are not musicians.
Yes.
We are just having fun.
We're just in a park across the street.
The street. Okay, well, she's fucked up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And now.
And pause it. The coolest thing anyone's ever said. Right?
I don't know
the way she says it.
L-A-T-E-R that week. It's like a baby.
She does sound like a rugrat.
A baby learned it's Angelica. No, it's Chucky.
She sounds a little like Chucky. Or does she sound more like Phil and or Lil?
Oh.
There's the slight raspiness.
L-A-T-E-R that week. This is now just becoming our reel for
right.
our voice acting.
Gotta get on that Rugrats reboot.
Oh my God. It would be full circle.
They're doing it.
I feel like I should be on that.
I mean...
I feel like I should... Listen, I'm just going to put it out there. I think I should be on that.
They're going to pluck from the podcast community, right? When Rugrats is recasting, they're going to go, you know...
We need
is
the
Terry
hottest
Gross
voice.
Available?
Cherry Glazer.
Yes.
Jason Bentley.
John Favreau.
Of all the words to spell.
Yeah.
L-A-T-E-R that week. Not her name.
No.
Not like even really a rhythmic thing.
No.
Just later.
Yeah.
And also that week, are we referring to the week that her brother was said? What
yeah.
week? She just established time in a song that otherwise has no established timeline.
I wonder if they wrote it and it was like later that week. And they were like, can we stretch it out? Later. They were like, how do we make later longer? We don't want to add more words.
Love to imagine this original version where they're going
later that week.
Across the street.
Right.
Later that week.
Yeah. Like, fuck, it's what? How do we?
Macklemore wishes.
Yeah.
Also, it's like, I think part of the appeal of a spell break in a song, which I don't really ever hear done outside of pop, 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 pop.
Sure.
Or hip hop. That's like quickly to a beat and kind of meant to be impressive. Maybe a little R&B if it's sexy, like USHERRAYMOND. Like,
yeah.
I get that. But to just to be like LATER that week, it feels almost like you're singing to a child.
It does.
Quietly teaching them how to spell through the power of song. And now what?
that's where you're gonna make your stars out of me. That's where it retreats.
Stop, stop. Stop. The syllables are a fucking mess on this whole verse.
You have these lyrics, right?
Yes, how could we not? I couldn't understand any of that other than she was suspending things and trying to cram things in.
It sounds like she is listing a series of fake snack foods that exists at a TV show where they cannot use the names of real snack foods, right?
Like Yum Yum Snackies.
Right.
Uh-huh. They did a bad job Greeking the names.
Right, because what are the words she's saying here?
My sticky paws.
Okay, sounds like a snack, right?
For dogs?
No, like that's like a hostess style.
A bear
like,
claw.
Right.
Uh-huh. My sticky paws were into making straws out of big fat Slurpee treats. Big fat Slurpee treats.
Yeah.
What did we need, big and fat?
I'm hearing straws, big fat Slurpee treats.
Slurpee treats. Again, big fat Slurpee treats.
Yeah.
One too many words.
I mean, incoherent the way she sings it, but so many words crammed in there.
When she says big fat Slurpee treats, I would say that's a Slurpee, but then the addition of the word treat
makes me think that this is something I don't even understand.
It's a liquid, but a solid.
Right. What? A
goo block.
Fat Slurpee treat?
Giant, like, Cliff Bar goo shot.
Because I even feel like, if the idea was, oh, we're drinking large Slurpees.
Then she's making straws out of like Twizzlers. I did a hand jerk off motion by accident.
No, what I'm trying to say is just, I mean, I love that your brain went there. You really should start pitching to candy companies. But no, I just feel like we all know like Big Gulp as terminology. We understand that like Slurpee has a branding for their major sizes, you know? And if you're talking about just a large Slurpee.
Big fat Slurpee trees.
But calling it a big fat Slurpee treat.
Well, she says she's making it into straws, so it can't actually be a Slurpee unless she has some science that we don't have.
Right.
Maybe she's into like gastronomy? Molecular gastronomy.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to say. Maybe she's Wiley Dufresne and she's using like tapioca.
I hope so.
And she's forming it into a gel state to make Slurpees into straws.
I would love to go to her restaurant.
It's candy themed?
Yeah.
Actually sounds amazing. Did we just invent a restaurant concept?
It's called Big Fat Slurpee Treats.
It's deliberately lowbrow. That's the point.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Or maybe she's on that next level where she's got the Twizzlers, the hollow ones, not the pull and peel.
Sure.
You know, they're all stuck together.
Yes.
Instead of taking one, chewing off the end and sucking up the Slurpee, she's doing the whole fist at once, chewing the ends off of 10 at a time, both sides, and then her whole mouth deep throating it. That's what it means.
You are a lunatic.
That's what it sounds like she's doing.
That is some of the most upsetting imagery I have had placed in my brain in a long time.
Every sip is like two shots of Slurpee. Jeez,
I'm like recoiling at thinking about how much sugar that is. I eat way too much sugar.
It's 1 million miles of sugar.
1 million miles of sugar.
But then she says an incredible 8-foot heap.
What? Of the treats?
Twizzler ends that she's nibbling off and throwing.
I hate to say this, but Occam's razor, I think you have to be right. You are describing the most logical interpretation of these lyrics.
It's either molecular gastronomy or a pile of Twizzlers.
It kind of has to be.
Sharon Costanzo, come on the pod and explain yourself.
Wow, okay.
Okay, I don't know where we could possibly go from there, but she does go somewhere.
I mean, that could be gibberish. It truly could. The funny flare.
Glare
of not being there.
I wish. To pay a gleaming tear, T-A-R-E, in a staring underheat. This is no longer English, I'm pretty sure.
Just read that all back to me one more time.
Okay, you're going to need to close your eyes and really try to feel
I'm
this.
I'm really trying to focus on this. Okay.
Now, the funny glare to pay a gleaming tear in a staring underheat.
Now, the funny glare.
Involved. An under-usual feat.
Right, not unusual feat, an under-usual feat.
So she realized the syllable problem of the previous lines and came up with what she thought was the solution.
And I assume it's feat as in F-E-A-T.
Correct.
Okay. I mean, you can't count out song.
She might just be like, hey, casually, I have a tiny, tiny pinky toe.
Yeah, I'm hanging out under usual feet.
She's like, just so everyone knows, my feet are normal. Do not check.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to attempt to try to understand what that meant. The funny glare to pay a gleaming tear to staring underheat.
Sure.
Underheat, the first place my brain jumps is when you're sweating between your butthole and your genitals.
But of course.
That's an underheat.
Yeah, I mean, I'd never thought about that, but sure. I just keep on going back to that bench slide. Like, I'm thinking about, like, the park across the street.
Oh, my God.
Do you know
fart.
What I'm saying? Like, him
right
crying
there.
On the bench.
It's right there.
I'm like,
it's a metal slide.
Right.
She's wearing a sundress.
Yeah.
It's getting hot.
Right.
Underheat.
It just always, I always linked those two things together, even though the individual words
no, you're
made
right.
so little sense.
The glare,
to me.
The gleaming. It's a right. metal slide with the sun hitting it.
Which gets to this Rashomon aspect of the song where we're like, we're surrounding the same events and the same locations from different perspectives.
Well, no, that was her that's on the slide.
But I'm saying he's like already talked about being at the park near the bench slide. So I'm saying, like, these things are all working together. Maybe. I'm desperately trying to make sense of this.
I don't think he mentions a park. He was just on the grass. Oh, my God. I think he says on the grass. As in weed.
Oh, wow.
That would make more sense why she's like, I was on acid, and he's like, I was high.
Wait, so time is folding in on itself.
We just goes all at the top.
Was bench slide one of her lines
yes,
or one of his lines?
That was her line.
Okay, but he's on the grass.
He's smoking weed. He's on the devil's lettuce.
He might be doing both. He might be smoking weed on some...
acid?
On some grass,
listen,
I was going to say, in a field.
Oh, that's the best place to smoke grass,
right,
of course.
Right.
But then we don't know that he's in the same park. That's never established.
No.
I just know that she's now on a hot slide that's heating up her giblets, and uh-huh. she's not doing anything about it because she's frying.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be correct.
I get that. So that actually, I can't believe we cracked it.
Yeah, we so cracked. Cut and dry.
It was there the whole time.
It's so obvious.
Okay, what else?
I'm not only among, but I'd invite you, I'd want to come.
I invite who I want to come.
But is it the first part?
Yeah, you
right?
got it. I'm not only among, but I invite who I want to come.
Does not make sense. I'm not only among who I invited.
Nope.
Is one thing, but it's I'm not only among, but.
Yeah.
I don't think you can say among but. I think you have to follow up among
with
the
noun,
things that you
an
are
object.
Amongst. Do
right.
you not?
Oh, you do. I mean, in English, you do.
Of course.
In sober English,
in
you
human
do.
Speak, right.
However. I don't know that she's operating on those planes anymore.
I'm not only among.
Among could be a person. Maybe that's like how she identifies. I'm
a,
not only
among. A monk. I'm not only.
No, it still doesn't make
a
sense.
A singular monk. I'm not only among.
Among mean. Among mean. That was the sweet, tasty treat.
I'm not only among, but I invite who I want to come.
Yeah, so maybe she's trying to say.
Because it's so close to being like.
A sentence.
I'm. Look, I'm not only surrounded by those I invited, who I wanted here. It's like she's almost saying that, except she isn't at all.
And I think putting it in the context of the next line followed up with, so I missed a million miles of fun, we know that this is somehow isolating her, right?
Totally.
So somehow, this is honestly, I think, the hardest song to parse on this podcast because I keep trying to write off, this is gibberish.
Right.
And then in the 11th hour, there's like, oh my God,
it
was,
weird
it's there.
Connection. Well, because we've talked about the sort of like existential loneliness of
yeah.
I missed a million miles of fun. And that came, you know, this rhymes with his final like sort of cry, which is the
exact same, right?
Right. And you can only, what's his, I'm
And
now,
of course you can't become if you only
say what you
would have
done. And that's such a clear sentiment, even if it sounds like a little like goofy, like children's yeah. story.
Trapped by an
rhyme.
Action.
Right. He's trapped by an action.
And she's trapped by self-isolation.
Because this is supposed to rhyme with that, you know, spiritually.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. No. I absolutely. When you say spiritually rhyme, it suddenly makes sense to me.
And she's ending on the same note with the missed a million miles of fun. These are two people who are both their own worst enemies in terms of living their best lives.
Yes.
But what is her conflict here? She's not only among, but...
Here's what it is. She's choosing to feel isolated. So she's around people. She's not only.
Yeah.
She's not solo.
Yeah.
But because she's selective about who she lets in,
but
among...
But I invite who I want to come, and the meaning there, the inference we can take is she doesn't invite anybody.
Yeah.
She is so sort of standoffish.
She's so only among.
That right.
That no one's invited. And then we go back to that same chorus, which I did leave in because I just wanted to listen to it again.
Yeah, of course.
We just breezed right past the fact, first chorus, that who would steal someone's sunshine? Tim and Chad and...
Well, especially when both of these characters, our two protagonists, feel like they are pretty self-defeating in terms of getting their own sunshine.
They steal their own sunshine.
They steal their own
sunshine. So are they sunshine. Speaking to themselves?
Or are they speaking to the drugs?
They're begging the drugs not to give them a bad trip.
Or that it's an escape from reality, from the tangible happiness that they could maybe achieve if they invested their time in other people
instead
and
self-actualization.
Yeah.
Is it
avoidance? Am I onto something?
I think you're 100% correct.
I just keep on going back to $5,000 worth of liquor for a 2-day shift.
Well, and remember I was saying initially he had the inspiration for the lyric content at a rave where he was fucked up, presumably, and watching other people.
Right.
And so that absolutely he's just like, this is in my head that I feel so isolated because I'm so fucked up.
It kind
and then
of
the
feels
female
like,
thing was just to try to be a human league.
But it also feels like it's a song about two people who love getting fucked up.
Yeah.
Very briefly taking a look in the mirror and going, am I miserable?
Oh my God. There is that moment.
Am I just avoiding how I actually feel? Am I miserable? Is this terrible?
This is an avoidance tactic that you're telling yourself is somehow coping.
Right.
It's not coping.
That I'm having a great time. That I'm having a ball.
No. And there's that moment when you physically do look in the mirror right after something kicks in and you look at yourself and you go, oh, that's not me. I don't know who that is.
Well, and now I want to re-underline some lyrics.
What?
I know it's up to me.
I know it's up for me?
For me? Is it for me or to me?
Genius says for me, but who knows?
If you steal my sunshine, making sure I'm not in too deep.
Didn't take too much. Or not getting too down in the hole.
Yes.
Keeping versed and on my feet.
I mean, these all sound
It's drugs.
Like,
it's drugs.
Right?
It actually is drugs.
I think it is.
Griffin! I mean...
Which kind of sells... all the parts of the song that don't make sense because there's someone...
They're
just,
fucked up.
They're just fucking blitzed out of their gourd trying to open up to someone in a rare moment of vulnerability saying, I should get it together.
That can only happen because they're fucked up.
But also their grasp on language is a little bit loopy at that point.
Let's chalk it up to them being A, high, and B, Canadian. They might have different words there.
They might.
I don't know.
They honestly might. We also need to talk about the weird sci-fi sound effects, which come in so hard here. Because you described it as like the weird wind time tunnel thing. But in this chunk, I also feel like I'm hearing like lasers blasting and like spaceship zooming.
Absolutely. There's some element of this that feels like we're being abducted.
Yes.
Which maybe now that this is a drug thing, that is kind of a musical metaphor.
Being spaced out. You know what I'm saying?
It's right there and it's been right there the whole time.
It's been right there the whole time. But they sound like the sounds that a child would make when playing sci-fi
with
on
Legos.
Like a playground or with Legos or with anything.
Yeah. Like, again, please remember that they were so fucked up this whole time.
Right.
So you're probably right. They probably went to the producer and were like, hey, if we're going to do this deal, I need $150,000 and one of these.
Yeah. Right. They brought in the producer's 5-year-old son. And said, oh no, aliens are attacking. And he laid down track for an hour.
And it only gets more insane with the next section, where the chorus repeats but changes a little bit. I know it's done for me. If you steal my sunshine, not something hard to see. If you steal my sunshine, keep it dumb and built to beat.
I mean,
What's happening?
I know it's done for me is pretty bleak.
Yeah, that's
this
the new lyric.
Upbeat a song, right?
That's the first time he said that.
Yeah.
So I think
I'm done. There's no saving me.
I think he's accepted.
Yeah.
That either he did too much drugs, or which is of course the correct way to say that
he's never going to be able to get out.
He's done too much drugs, or just mentally, while on the correct amount of drugs, has fallen down a dark spiral.
And then what's the next line after that? No, it's done for me.
Not some. I really wonder if these lyrics are correct. Mm-hmm. Not some and hard to see.
Mm-hmm. I have no... Yeah.
His vision's going?
Not so, yeah, sure. Not some is what's throwing me off, yeah.
That could be a wrong word, or maybe he's saying he's like not a person anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not some.
Yeah. I mean, in Len speak, that kind of makes sense. With the vernacular they've already established, it kind of makes sense.
And then keeping dumb and built to beat, which makes me think he's going to start a fight.
Yeah, and stay fucked up. Like, let me keep dumb.
Oh, keep dumb.
You know?
That's like when you start to sober up and you're like, where's my joint?
No, I'm not getting out of this.
Well, with the last part of the song,
okay.
54 seconds.
God,
we get a kind
Parting
of a B
such
section.
Sweet sorrow. But she has such a nice final surprise for us.
She does, and I love the melody.
Yeah.
And she finally gets to hold a syllable.
I know. And you're just basking in it. It's like
I feel high. It's a good high.
I feel like I'm like rollerblading. You know?
Yes, Venice Pier.
Exactly. Just on the boardwalk. Got big ass sunglasses
that you just bought for 99 cents
and they fit my face perfectly.
Sustained. And then back to that.
I know.
How it ends on the album version? I never heard that.
You know what's weird? That might be the single version because I feel like the album version
goes on forever, right?
It fades, like crossfades into a weird little rap thing where he goes like, to the beat, y'all, rock, 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 to the beat, what? It's really dumb, but I always remember the song fading rather than ending abruptly like that and then going to that weird rap thing.
Hey, let me see if I can find it in this amount of time.
Because that was always the thing that stood out to me where I was like, this feels like that belongs in a different song.
I don't know. Here's one that's 30 seconds longer. Let's find out. So what the hell version is this?
Fade, right?
Yeah. This is what I remember.
Yes. Fade into.
Oh my God. To the beach, y'all. Rock, rock. Oh my God. Stop. I wish you would stop.
Like the most basic rap bullshit in the world.
It sounds like it comes on like the rap program you download.
Yes.
Like while the app is loading, this is the song that plays.
100%. This is like the sample of. This is what rap sounds like to the beat and you don't stop.
I don't know that we needed that.
No, it's bad.
It's bad.
It's bad, but I prefer the fade out.
I do.
And I was about to ask you this, as someone who's covering songs regularly, where do you stand on fade out versus hard finish?
I think that it's super circumstantial,
okay.
Song to song.
Yeah.
I think some songs call for a fade out. I think some songs should not have had fade outs.
Sure.
I'm not opposed inherently to a fade out.
Yeah.
I don't love when a song goes on. It feels self-indulgent to me when it just trails on and on and on.
Yeah.
But some songs, like when they cut hard out,
yeah.
I just envision the black box performance where everyone like slams to their knees and the lights go out.
Sure.
And it doesn't feel great.
Sure.
And this felt like that to me.
Sure.
This weird truncated version.
I feel that, or I feel like you're dancing and then you're suddenly in that awkward zone where the song is abruptly ended and you're waiting for the next song to start and you're not sure if you're going to like it.
That's why you need a good DJ.
Whereas the fade like allows you to gracefully sort of like...
fade out of dancing.
Yeah. I feel like any song that is danceable should end with a fade. That's sort of my stance.
Strong take.
You know? Any song that's like kind of like got a party like dance vibe to it should end with a fade. Out of generosity to those who will be dancing to it at some point.
I don't mind a single instrument shining at the very end and playing me out.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. I don't think it needs a fade inherently,
right.
But it doesn't. I can't have a hard out. I need a little come down.
Let me change
refractory
my language
period.
A little bit. That's what I want. I want a wind down rather than a harsh finish.
The cool down, the treadmill's 2 minutes after the run.
So it can be a fade. It can be a minimalization. It can be a weird segue. It can be whatever.
But not... a generic ass wannabe Bismarck key rap. What was that? Who was that for?
I'm realizing I need to edit my own version of this song between the two different endings. Because what I want is no rap with fade out.
Yeah.
And it seems like you're going to be forced It's a Sophie's choice. You got to take one or the other.
Again, I don't think as a Gentile I can say that.
But I'm very Jewish and I can.
I still think it's pretty fucked up. But yeah, yeah, yeah. I feel like I get what you're saying and sure. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Uh-huh.
However, now that we've listened to this whole song, we need to figure out, is there more we would do to it?
Sure. Well, I mean, that's my first punch up.
Keep the fade out.
And that's
easy. But not the rap.
Right. That's easy. Okay. That's just mixing around a little bit on Pro Tools, right? That's a very, very fast punch up. Here's, I'm going to say this, it might be controversial.
What?
I'd put like two more sketches in there. I want to know more about these characters. We still have so many plot questions. I want the story to retain some of its mystery.
Yeah.
But I'd love the world to be built out even a little bit more. Okay. And I'd like to see the range that these two actors could apply to maybe four other characters with similarly generic names.
So we need to have, what, four verses that just that are half as long?
Yeah. Hey, Ted. Yeah? William?
Oh my God. Okay. Yeah. More, you want more world building, more sketches.
Yeah.
And then a fade out.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the song that we're cutting to, you want it to stay on the same theme, or do you not have strong feelings about that?
Well, yeah. So let's talk about what would happen in the other two verses now that go in between the sketches.
So you want to keep the first two the same?
I think everything that's in there is
preserved.
Kind of, yeah. Okay. I think it's kind of unimpeachable.
Okay.
I think it's pretty perfect.
Okay. So just add two verses and we're changing the sketch too. So add two
sketches, two verses.
Okay.
So we know about Mark and we know about Sharon and they both look
and
bad.
Tim, Matt and Chad.
Right.
So you want to add four people to the mix?
Yeah, well, because...
No, you want to add six people
to
the mix.
Well, here's my question. For verse three, do we go back to Mark or do we introduce a new character? Are we going to do another Mark, another Sharon?
So we give this the old cats is what you're saying.
Well, because the other option is these are two siblings, right? They're brothers and sisters.
And then they have two more siblings.
I was going to say we go to their parents. If we want to find out the root of their sadness, what's the real problem there? Who stole their sunshine?
Mom and dad.
You always.
Isn't it always mom and dad?
It's always mom and dad.
Okay, I think I have my work cut out for me.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to this one, if nothing else, to showcase my voice acting.
And here's the other thing. The lyrics can be gibberish.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying?
That's a thought.
Like, we've now found the theme. And so only like one.
Drugs, it's just being high.
One out of every five words has to vaguely sound like something.
Yeah. Okay, my big fat Slurpee treat.
Right. But you can kind of just like. To a degree, you could maybe random word generator two more verses.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We got this. I think...
Into Missed a Million Miles of Fun.
Yeah.
And then where you really have fun is with the sketches.
I am so appreciative that you fit this exact corner of comedy and also writing, acting.
That's what it's about, baby.
Because you just made my work so easy for me. Thank you so much.
Hey, you're welcome.
I'm very interested, honestly, to see what I do. Because
I am
at this
too.
Point, we'll find out.
Edge of my seat. Who knows?
With that said, should we get to Unpunchable Jam?
You can't punch this.
Griffin, I'm very curious to hear what song you want to shout out.
A song that I think is...
Just great.
Completely unpunchable.
I mean... You just like.
Yeah. Let me look. Do you have one? Because I want to look through my phone and see what I've been recently playing. I feel like there's something I'm forgetting.
Of course. I wanted to do a song that was by a fellow Canadian. Of course, let's say it with me, Joni Mitchell. And it's, in my mind, a summer jam because I'm not really a big, like, Len girl.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Carrie.
Oh, Carrie, get out your cage.
This song just makes me want to dance in a way that doesn't feel good for my body.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way I want to karate chop a board when Len comes in, when the beat drops, I want to dance in a way that hurts my spine when the beat drops, so to speak, and carry.
Sure.
What is your unpunchable jam?
So I remember what it was. I was like, I feel like there's a new song I've been listening to a lot. And then I remember it is not a new song at all, but it is the thing I've been listening to on loop. Your former dearly departed co-host, Demi Adejuwebe.
Yeah. You make him sound dead, but yes.
Dead to me. He's not on the show anymore. How dare he? He was on my podcast Blank Check recently for an episode about the Talking Heads movie Stop Making Sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been obsessively re-listening to their version of Heaven from that. And the live version of that, I think, is just kind of one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard.
So the live version of Heaven. By the
Talking live Heads. Version of Heaven from the Stop Making Sense soundtrack.
Heaven is a place
I don't think you could get better than that. And I think of it specifically because I had listened to the studio version so many times and thought, you can't get better than this.
Oh my God, and then they did. They punched themselves up.
I think the live version, which I hadn't heard in years, is arguably better.
Oh, I'm so excited to listen to it. Great. I don't know even the original version.
Oh, one of the best songs ever written.
I know, Don't Worry the Government, whatever. I love that song.
Yeah, they rule. Also, everyone should watch Stop Making Sense.
Is it good?
It's like my co-host and I, and then our producer and Demi all came to the recording and kind of all agreed, like, so we all rewatched this last night, right? Is this the best movie ever made? Non-hyperbolically, I think there's an argument for it being the most perfect film ever made.
Wow. And then also he has a show right now, right? David Byrne has a show on
Broadway.
He
does, American Utopia on Broadway, which I need to go see.
Yeah, we
had just rewatched this thing, and I think it's like a band at the peak of their powers, working with a filmmaker at a peak of their powers.
Who made it?
Jonathan Demme.
Oh, wow. I had no idea. Wow,
yeah,
I had no idea.
And it's like the best concert film ever made. It's like a beautifully directed and edited and shot, sort of capsule of... Mm,
but have you seen Never Say Never?
I have, and I think it's great.
I fully think it's great.
Spice World's not a concert film. It's
a
beautiful narrative.
In a way.
It is a wonderful work of fiction.
I love that, of course, you being you, found a way to shoehorn in an unpunchable movie into your unpunchable jam show.
Yeah, they're one and the same. But let me throw in another unpunchable movie.
Yeah.
Never Say Never slaps. People don't take it seriously. I've been recommending it to people for a decade or whatever. It's a fucking fascinating movie.
Yeah, because you believe.
You've seen it, right?
No.
So here's the thing. It's half concert footage done well. Mm. Half of it is like a documentary about how weird a phenomenon Justin Bieber is.
Extremely weird.
Yeah.
I dressed as him for Halloween one year, and it was quite a blow to my ego because it was a last minute. I kind of looked like him. My haircut looked like his at the time.
Yeah.
And then I walked around Carnival in West Hollywood, where like people go that are actually special effects designers and look incredible.
Yeah.
And I think I was the most requested person to take a photo with against 1,000 Justin Biebers in purchased expensive costumes. And I really wasn't wearing a costume. I just kind of did my hair different.
And you were like, fuck, do
wearing
I look
my own
that
clothes?
Much like Okay. So can I very quickly tell you a very similar story?
Yeah.
Some years ago, probably 8 or 9 years ago, when she was starting to hit big.
She?
I'm about to tell you who. I felt like at that moment in time, as she was hitting the mainstream, where I was in my physical growth, with my haircut and my style at that time, Rachel Maddow and I looked very similar. I think we had the exact same thing going on when I was like 21 and she was like first on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided I was going to be Rachel Maddow for Halloween. I had the same haircut.
It's obvious. Low effort.
My glasses were more similar to hers at the time. We both had similar sort of glasses, and I borrowed like a blazer and slacks from my mom and shoes, and I like had my Rachel Maddow costume. And I got so depressed on Halloween that I didn't go out. I put it on and then got so depressed and my social anxiety became so overwhelming that I never left the house. I didn't wear the costume out. I sat on my couch and drank by myself while dressed as Rachel Maddow.
That's the next verse of the song.
Totally. I hope that inspires you. Please put that in the song. Please. Please put that in the song. To make it worse, I was drinking Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Stop!
I swear
it's
to you.
So much sugar!
I swear to you.
That's
I swear
a million
to you.
Miles of sugar!
Of course. And that's perfect, Len. Please put it in the song. Please. Many months later, I'm at a bar in New York City, and a large group comes in. And it's the kind of thing where it's pretty late. Most of the bar had cleared out. We thought we were going to close the place down. This large group comes in, takes up a table with like 15 seats.
Okay.
So you kind of just turn your head because you know it's like, who's this group? What is this? They all seem to know each other well, seem like some kind of party, and then realize that the head of the table was Rachel Maddow.
That's a sighting I would actually get excited about.
I did too. I was so big on her at this time. And not that I'm not now, but like she was new and I was like so excited by her,
yeah.
Right? And was watching her.
Coming out
all
from the wing
time.
Of Keith Olbermann, we were all so excited.
Totally, totally. So my friends were like, you have to. And I was like, built up courage, went up to her. I was like, I am so sorry to bother you. And she turned around and she looked at me like kind of aghast, right? And
no.
I was like,
no, no.
Oh no, what's going on? And I was like, I'm so sorry to bother you. I just want to tell you, this is really embarrassing, but people always tell me that I look like you and I hope you don't take that as an insult, but like it came up so much that I dressed up as you for Halloween one year and then I got so depressed that I couldn't leave my house. So I just stayed at home drinking Mike's Hard Lemonade on my couch, dressed up as you. And it's one of the weirder nights of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, that is so strange because I was kind of taken aback when you stepped up here. I was going to say, geez, you look a lot like me.
Oh. okay. Rachel Maddow burned you. I mean, not that she's a bad person to look like, but just that it's like,
I think
to feel so seen in that way,
I know,
is scary.
I think she's a very attractive person, but it was that weird thing, like you saying, like, I don't even think I'm dressing up that much. I was wearing my own clothes, and before I started telling the story,
yes,
I saw something on her face.
That she was like, me, not me.
Whoa, this is weird. Like, I'm looking in a mirror. She had that kind of reaction.
If she was on acid and she looked at you, she might think it was a mirror.
She missed a million miles of fun.
Thank you so much for telling me that. Please. I don't know why that just full. It really delights me.
Yeah.
It's such a great
and
moment.
And now you have more material for the punch up. I've made your job easier.
Griffin, what do you want to promote? Where should people follow you? What should they, obviously, Blank Check.
Blank Check with Griffin and David. Listen to that. We're starting our series on the films of Jonathan Demme with the other Demme coming up soon.
Ooh.
That's fun. That's a thing that people should listen to. I'm very proud of that show. I host it with David Sims from The Atlantic. And it's about filmographies. We like pick a director who got Blank Check status at some point, quote unquote.
Like Lended for their music video.
Like Lended. Unfortunately, they only got one check, but it was big and they spent most of it on liquor. But someone like Jonathan Demme, who makes Silence of the Lambs and then gets to make crazy stuff after that. And the crazy stuff he makes before that, like a Talking Heads movie. That's a thing that people should listen to.
If you like movies at all.
Yeah.
Very, very fun to listen to. David's an incredible film critic.
He's an incredible film critic. He's got an amazing brain and is a smart person.
When I met him briefly at that party, whatever, a few weeks ago, I was like, uh-oh, too smart. We can't actually speak.
But he's one of those smart people who has no airs about him. Where you're like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's not like pretentious at all. And he's so nice where you're just like, this sucks that you're this smart and you can act like a normal person.
Like a nicey smarty.
Usually when you meet someone smarter than you can be like, but he's pretentious fuck. Like, just you like, can sort of...
Knock on wood, he's really bad at basketball or something.
No, he's tall and he's got long arms. I'm sure he's great at basketball. He's talked about playing before.
Well, thank you again for coming on.
My pleasure.
It was very fun. If you want to follow me, I'm at Meow Meow Monster. The show's Punch Up the Jam on everything. And we'll see you for this Punch Up and then next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And now for world premiere.
Steal My Sunshine, except now it has more. And it's a period piece. It's a time jump. Griffin thought it was a time. You know, just listen.
Say, Donald.
Well, what's the rumble, Clarence?
Well, I'm not sure our friend Herman is doing ducky.
Herman is doing ducky.
Well, he does seem to be behind the eight ball lately. What do you suppose we should do? Well, does he like deviled eggs?
I was feeling like a boo on Sunday morning of last week, outside of the speakeasy. On a tooth pulled a Daniel Boone, sipping Joel Rubs of ski, hightailing it to the Paisley. Was on the nut, fearful rock, got my cabbage running weak.
Looking like a real gooseberry lay. Wait, wait, what? Like malarkey, she looks like malarkey. Well, no, but a gooseberry lay is to steal clothes from a clothesline. Yeah, but check this out. Mary, I love you!
I was sipping little juice, except the tea wasn't made from leaves. P-O-P-P-Y-C-E-S. I was doing tricks with getaway sticks, a.k.a. my legs. Feeling Jake and Hotsy Totsy. And I'm not only a monk, but we are out of our beyond.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.